Breaking news coming in from Bet365, where every nail-biting overtime win, breakaway, pick six, three-point shot, underdog win, buzzer beater, shootout, walk-off, and absolutely every play in between is amazing. From football to basketball and hockey to baseball, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio.
Thank you. Hello again, fellow basement dwellers. This is your good friend Patrick O'Dowd welcoming you in to another edition of Bandwagon Nerds. Bandwagon Nerds is, of course, brought to you as part of the Chairshot Radio Network here on thechairshot.com, where we remind you to always use your head.
Thechairshot.com. Always use your head.
And make sure you head over to prowrestlingtees.com/thechairshot. And invest in a chair shot shirt design if you love what we do. $19.99 for a shirt. Spend a few dollars more. Get it soft style. It'll feel great on your giblets. We have quite a unique show today, if you ask me, as we're gonna get a little outside of the bandwagon on our episode, season, breakdown, whatever you want to call it. We've never really named the series breakdown segment. It just kind of is what it is. I'm terribly sorry. Shameful of me to not do this first. Welcome in the other members of the bandwagon. We do have my good friend, the lawyer himself, David Ungar. We have the, you know, Mr. Saturday Night, Mr. PC Tunney, the foundation, the keystone block of the foundation at the Chairshot Radio Network, part of the Chairshot.com, the man who makes sure that you get a podcast every day of the week, even when others perhaps don't get a podcast put together for their day of the week.
Some weeks are easier than others.
Well, and here's the thing. We are on tap. So next week I am gone because I will be visiting our fearless leader, the man, the myth, the legend, my best friend, Greg DeMarco, you know, host of the Greg DeMarco show when it airs. I won't be here to do recordings. However, there will be a Greg DeMarco show unless Greg cancels on this coming Wednesday. That is my commitment to you from my side of the house.
I am
prepared and armed, ready to go. I told this to Dave. I'll share it.
Listen,
I even watched pro wrestling. I watched the WWE. I watched SmackDown this week. I never watched SmackDown.
Well, it's a good show. All I know is we're all here now, and you just did hockey talk, so I don't have to worry about anything till Wednesday. So that's pretty good.
Hockey talk was a delight. We didn't entirely talk hockey. Other sports.
Tony's like, as long as I got something to put up in that slot, I don't give a shit.
I just built a slot to
talk about knitting for all I care.
No, there has got to be a line somewhere.
Knitting talk. I don't know if that's going
to
work. So
there. Knitting talk. No, I don't think that is going to work. We are coming to you here on Monday. It's Veterans Day. Many people have the day off today, recognizing those who have served. I am amongst those that gets to work for a state institution. That's nice. Been a busy week for myself personally. Dave, you'll care about this. My Disney Vacation Club contract is done.
Ooh.
Done. The contract is closed. We start paying Disney next month and can now start, in 10 months when our contract finally loads with points, because the person we bought it from used all their points in our use year is September. So they don't load until September.
Now, with your political affiliation, are they going to let you into Florida or are they just going to ban you?
Well, here's the thing. I, as a straight white dude in a traditional American family with a wife and child, am probably more than welcome just about
anywhere else. Income.
But we're not going to do this today. We're not going to go into a political wasteland. I don't want to do that. The election has happened. It is long since done. I've already gotten into some shenanigans with some other friends. Don't want to do it here on this podcast. That's not what we're here to do. What we are here to do is talk some nerdy shit. We're going to talk. Tony's laughing because he knows I'm full of shit on that one. I will get on the
floor. Who did you write in for the election? You wrote somebody in, didn't you?
Oh, my God. Yeah. I am not telling anybody anything about what I did or did not do for the election. It is none of your business. I only advised everyone to get out and do their part and vote.
And that is fair enough. Dave, we're not going down the hole.
No.
We're not
doing it. I was just saying that's like that Dave Chappelle thing, you know, he's talking about, you know, who'd you vote for? Hey, Dave, hold on a second, Dave. Hold on. Starts talking about anal sex with.
Whoa, okay, Dave. Why are you talking about anal sex with someone's wife? This is a family friendly fucking show.
I got my asshole bleached too, and I love my new asshole.
There's not always an appropriate time, but you guys were kind of talking about it. Like, that one's on you guys.
He started it. All I wanted to do was introduce the series that we're covering, the 5-episode series on Amazon. We're taking a new direction, and now we're talking about bleached assholes and anal sex. And there's the name of the show.
No, I don't think Greg's going to go for that.
Unfortunately, it's not. It's not. That's but, you know, if this was a different channel, maybe. But what we are going to do today.
But don't.
No. This show's off the rails. It's all right. No, it's fine. We've gone this far. Take us the rest away. we are going to go a little different than what we normally do in our show coverage. We talked about this back in the trailer park a while back, but there is a series on Amazon titled Game 7, and we were all of us on the bandwagon, and I think it was myself, Dave, Tawny, and I think it was Ray. I don't think DP was on that episode, but it was a different sort of excitement and motivation that I saw from us as we talked about like our favorite game sevens. And so we decided as a group that we would do something a little different with covering shows and that we're going to cover this mini, and it's the definition of a mini series. It's 5 episodes titled Game 7, taking a look back at some of the more famous game sevens in recent history, because the game sevens that are covered, I think the earliest one is that Flyers. That Oilers Flyers game 7
in
1987. Yeah. So that's the one in the Wayback Machine. I do want to recognize that I'm a little disappointed that I don't get to talk about one of the hockey game sevens because I won't be here for the show to do the hockey game sevens. I'll be boarding planes at the time.
Tony, so I expect you to do copious research on that game so you're prepared next weekend.
Well,
I will watch the episode.
Well, here's the thing is, I was talking about this when we were recording Hockey Talk. I anticipate this to be shorter rundowns in terms of like what we talk about with these episodes, particularly some of these game sevens where we may not have watched. Like, I don't recall the 87 game very well at all. I definitely remember the 94 Stanley Cup final game seven with the Rangers. I certainly remembered episode one, 2003, the Yankees and the Red Sox in one of the most infamous non-pitching changes in history. And for no other reason than I was out here in the area when this all happened and living in New England at the time and in the heart of Red Sox Yankees country, because episode one was game seven of the American League Championship Series between the New York Yankees and the Boston Red Sox in Yankee Stadium. Aaron Boone's walk-off home run against Tim Wakefield in the 11th inning in a scenario that many a Boston Red Sox fan will tell you should have never been an issue. And the as Pedro Martinez, who had pitched brilliant through seven innings, was out of gas and thrown nearly 120 pitches. Very little comes out. Everybody thinks he's going to pull Pedro with runners in scoring, runners on base. They're starting to hit him. And Pedro talked his way in, as much as people don't want to believe it. And Grady Little will never tell you himself. Pedro Martinez talked Grady Little into letting him stay and try to finish the game. And the Yankees teed off, tied up the game, and goes to extra innings. And that led to the Aaron Boone home run. So it's a great game seven. And I was living in Connecticut at the time. And for those of you who don't know, Connecticut is very much like this split between Red Sox and Yankees fans. And I have this young man who was on my my resident assistant staff at the time. His name was James. Don't remember his last name. He was he's as diehard can come for Red Sox fans. So much so that the next year, when the Red Sox were going, when it was imminent that the Red Sox were going to win against my Cardinals, he asked for permission, because of the nature of his job, you're not supposed to be gone from the building overnight. He asked for permission to be able to go to Boston and celebrate and with his grandmother. And so I was like, how can you say no to that? How can you say no to 87 years in the making? But he had to wait an extra year, and the devastation behind that game was nothing short of tragic. That's not really talking about the series itself. That's talking about the game. But guys, do you remember that game? Do you remember where you were? Did you even watch that series? Let's just start there and just the takeaway from that game and just how huge that was. Tony, go ahead. I'm going to start with you.
Yeah, I watched it. I was Dan and I lived together in this time period, the early 2000s to mid 2000s. And the Brewers had never been really great. So we always liked the Red Sox too, just because, especially when the Brewers went to the National League, it was just like someone that was decent, but was also kind of like, you know, at the time had never really won anything. So I really hope in knowing that this is season one, that season two will have, its first episode will be game seven of that next year's series, which is amazing. But this game is just the fun part for me, being a pitcher, having pitched in high school and, you know, recruited in college, and just the Yankees, the fact that they went Clements, Mussina, and Wells, right? Like they threw like three Hall of Famers in the twilight of their career to piece together this game. And they all had this connection to George Herman Ruth, you know, out in the outfield where they would tap his head. And, you know, you realize that Noma is still at short for the Red Sox. Wicked awesome. And just the characters that those guys were. I mean, Kevin Pillar got a fucking MLB Network studio show out of being a character and winning this World Series. So they just, you said it, Grady Little should have made the pitching change. I kind of was happy for Aaron Boone at the time because he came over from Cincinnati. They talked about that, but like the yep. pressure of him having to be successful because of his family. Like his brother was one of the best DHs in baseball towards the end of his career, played second base too, I think. And obviously, you know, Joe Buck talked about his dad calling Bob Boone's games. So there was just a lot of lineage in what was happening that night. But yeah, it's funny. They talk about sometimes the pinstripes are a little heavy, right? They talked about that at the end of baseball this year for Juan Soto when he talked about, you know, he's loved his time there and he's open to listen to any offers, even New York again. And they talk about New York wanting the Yankees, especially wanting him back because those pinstripes aren't so heavy for some guys. So, yeah, you add in the one of the greatest sports rival, one of the top five sports rivalries in the history of, you know, modern day sports to put in the background of this awesome game seven. It was a good documentary. It was an even awesomer night, even though I was rooting for the Red Sox when it actually happened. And what a cool nickname, Aaron fucking Boone.
Yo, Dave.
Yeah, I remember game seven pretty well. Watching it go down and just seeing, you know, the Red Sox jump out to that big lead. And it's ironic, you know, Tony, you say that you hope like next year they'll do game seven of the following of 2004. I don't think they will, because that game seven wasn't that good, because Boston just beat the shit out of them. There was no question about who was winning game seven. And I mean, the series, yeah, the series is epic. But I think like watching that and seeing Boston jump out to that big lead and then, yeah, the Grady Little not making that change when Pedro had pitched 115. And he thought, well, maybe just get it one more inning out of him or just a couple more outs out of him. And it backfired. And what was it? Posada's bloop that tied the game up, you know, that sort of thing. And then once the Yankees tied it, you just got the feeling like, and Boston couldn't push through and couldn't really do much of anything after that. Yeah, Aaron Boone hitting the big walk off. Certainly not the guy you would expect, especially with that lineup that they had. But how clutch was Mariano Rivera in that series, right? And then you compare that to the next year where they get to him. They learn something and they get to him to turn that series around. But, yeah, it was like Tony's saying, it is one of the top five sports rivalries of all time. Arguably, and maybe not even arguably, the best baseball rivalry that there is. You know, with there's some great ones.
It's easily the best.
There's no question.
Yeah, baseball, nobody's questioning.
Yeah. And I loved that they covered game three and all the drama that went into game three with the big fight and Pedro throwing Zimmer down and all these guys pitching inside on each other. And just, man, that because that's one of the things that series is really remembered for is just the drama from that game, the same two pitchers. But the fact that game seven really undercut any of that shenanigans and that bullshit, you couldn't run the risk of hitting somebody in the wrong time in that game because there was so much on the line. But yeah, it's a really good start to this documentary. And like you guys are saying, there's a lot of legs that they can go with so many different game sevens. You could have 3-4 seasons of this.
I think they should do the next year though, Dave, because I know even though the game wasn't like a nail biter, it was still a really interesting, odd kind of game where they just kept piling on and piling on runs. But you talk about what they talked about here, game three, right? Martinez and
Don Zimmer.
Zimmer getting into it, etc. The story it tells, right? The story that next year is even told even more. They have to get to that. I think even though it is a game seven series, the story isn't getting to that game, though, right?
Well, the next year is all about everything up to then, you know. Yeah. Kurt Schilling, yeah. Well, the bloody
sock. You got to understand.
They can do
well,
this.
It's also they were down 3-0 in that series. Like it's the only time in the series history that you know a team came back from 3 down to overcoming and not get clinched.
Yeah.
It's funny looking back on the Don Zimmer Pedro Martinez thing because the Yankees tried so hard to vilify Pedro as if Don Zimmer wasn't the guy who charged his ass and like tried to get him. And Pedro just, as it was described, just matadored him out of the way. The fucker's 900 years old and fell and hit him. Like
he didn't even really push him. He just, like, Zimmer was going to... Zimmer squared up and, like, thought he could throw a right hand, and he just tumbled forward, and Pedro kind of put his hands out so that he didn't fall into him. That's really all
The SNL skit that they showed in the trailer was... episode was peak because it was really, really funny.
And foreshadowing here, we're gonna get to SNL in What You Watching this week. So
good episode, I'm sure, if you're ready to talk about it.
The one thing about it that I thought they did a really good job, and because like you know when you guys hear Hockey Talk this week, Pat and I talk about Steve Bartman and the Cubs collapse in 2003, which is the opposite. You know, as this series is going on and as epic as this is, the other side of the fence has something equally epic and you've got two franchises under the most notorious curses in all of baseball. The Billy Goat curse for the Cubs and the curse of the great Bambino with the Yankees. And so, I thought they did it like you were saying.
With the Red Sox.
Huh?
Curse of the Bambino was on the Red Sox.
Right. Yankees Red Sox series, that sort of thing. But like,
got you the rivalry. Yeah.
Right. Like Tunney was saying, it was cool. Like they always go out there and rub, you know, Babe Ruth's forehead, the statue out at Monument Valley or whatever the hell they call it out there. And even after they won, they're sharing champagne with his plaque. So I thought right. keep that curse alive until the next year where it was broken.
I do think the best part about, like, I love that we're focusing, that the series focuses on this one game because they did not win the World Series.
Right.
The Yankees did not win the World Series that year. They lost it to the Marlins in as we talked about it, and you'll hear about it tomorrow on Hockey Talk, in one of those years where, like, every year that Miami would win the World Series, they would immediately dismantle the entire team the next year. Like, it would just be like, fucking completely tear it down and blow it all off.
97
and they did that immediately after 03. Yeah. I remember where I was in the 97 World Series as well when the Yankees lost. Did the Yankees lose the Marlins that year, too?
No. It was the Indians.
Cleveland.
The Indians.
Yeah.
Anyway.
They went and won in 96, 98, 99, 2000. Lost in 2001 to the Diamondbacks.
That's the one. Luis Gonzalez. That's right.
That's the bloody sock. Ira.
No.
Yeah.
That's Curt Schilling in game 6. No, his
bloody sock was Curt Schilling. Yeah.
Game 6 of 04 at Yankees.
Oh, yeah,
Curt Schilling
that's right.
Pitched for the Diamondbacks. That was the Johnson and Schilling duo.
Yeah,
we know stuff. More than nerdy shit. We know sports shit. That's right, why this is called sports entertainment and sports entertainment.
Right pitcher. Yeah, make sure to right down. Pitcher, Tunney, wrong year.
Make sure to tune into Oblong Ball Foot Show every Thursday morning on Chairshot Radio Network.
And we got all kinds of stuff going on. The other thing that I loved, so I really enjoyed this episode. I only got one other thing. I really wish... And who knows why? I don't even know what the guy's like health is or say. I would have loved to have heard from them. I would have loved to have heard from Joe Torre. I would have loved to have heard from Grady Little. I would have I loved that they had Cashman on there. But Theo Epstein was the GM of the Red Sox at the time. Would have been interesting to hear from him too. I liked that they got some of that. I also loved that we had people don't like this guy. I disagree. I think he's a consummate pro. But he's polarizing. That's Joe Buck. I really appreciate Joe Buck. No, you hear some people talk and it's like Joe Buck is like this Nepo baby who just never doesn't know what he's doing and all this shit. But Joe Buck said one of the things that I absolutely loved and agree with. He was like, I loved doing Yankees Red Sox games because you know he's talking about the energy and everything. But he also talked about how much money that fucking series makes for a network. And it was very like this year, the Yankees and the Dodgers, you know, there was some disappointment that series only went 5 games.
Oh, yeah.
That 6 was going to be on a Friday night. Like the Bars wanted it to. Joe Buck's one of the best commentators of his generation. He's excellent at baseball.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
He's excellent at football. There's not a lot of guys who can do more than one and be the main guy. I feel like the guy about to be the next main guy is Brian Anderson, who's completely underrated. But you'll see.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. It's a lot. Joe Buck called my favorite World Series game of all time. So game 6, Cardinals.
Isn't that the one he does a callback to his dad's call from Kirby Puckett? Against with the Twins and the Braves.
We'll see you tomorrow night when David Freese hits the home run to push it to game 7. He says, "We will see you tomorrow night," which was something his dad said. So, all right. So there you have it, everybody. Episode 1 of game 7 on Amazon Prime. Really, you know, 1 hour episodes, very digestible. You know, they obviously don't cover everything that you could possibly cover in these series, but it is very much something like that I think is a good gateway drug to then go learn more about these series and these teams too. So I think it's going to be good. 4 more episodes to go.
I got one last quick 2 points.
Sure.
One, the way that Aaron Boone assesses his entry into the game and how he's feeling is such an accurate assessment of being on the bench and coming into a big game like that. It's beautiful. And for those of you that normally listen to Bandwagon Nerds and are not a sports fan, I encourage you to watch
it.
No, I encourage you. And I thought about this before I even turned it on this morning. I was like, you know, we're doing sports for the first time. You don't have to be a sports fan. You don't have to be a fan of baseball. You don't really have to know anything about baseball. This series and these games are about the characters, their development in the story, which there's plenty character development, and the story itself. It's just set in this setting of the sporting world, and in particular, this one was baseball. So whether or not you do love sports or hate sports, give it a try. I bet you'll find the story riveting.
Yeah, this is a really well-done series so far. I like it.
Yeah, like the next one is like going to be
interesting. Oh, thanks, Siri.
Series telling. Yeah, next one will be interesting with the Oilers and Flyers. So that'll be how that got to
Wayne
a game
Gretzky
seven.
Action.
How that got to a game seven is still
all right. Unlike Amazon, which puts their commercial breaks in weird spots and awkward moments, we're going to take our first commercial break in a place that makes sense. We come back. We're going to dive into the trailer park. You're listening to Bandwagon Nerds here on the Chairshot Radio Network, part of the Chairshot.com.
Breaking news, and this one is almost unbelievable.
Yeah, it's all about new customers at Bet365 because they get $150 in bonus bets when they bet $5. And even better, bonus bets can be used on the spread, totals, and player props.
There you have it. Bet $5 to get $150 in bonus bets. And see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. Terms and conditions apply.
Why should you visit TheChairShot.com? TheChairShot.com is your home for hard-hitting reviews, news, opinion, and analysis with attitude. Why? Because you're smarter than the average fan. TheChairShot.com. Always use your head.
Welcome back, everyone, to Bandwagon Nerds here on the ChairShot Radio Network, part of TheChairShot.com, where we remind you to always use your head. ProWrestlingTees.com/TheChairShot for all of your chair shot swag needs. Patrick McDowd, EC Tony, David Ungar here, giving you all that is in the world of nerdy shit. And apparently today, sports, fun stuff. And it is time to head over to the trailer park. But before we can do that, we gotta get David Ungar to fire up that beautiful banjo. So David, Tony wants to do it. Tony wants to fire it up. Tony, by all means, fire up that beautiful banjo.
Listen, I got banjos 2, banjos 3, banjos 4, banjos 5, and I don't think you've heard banjos 3 yet. So,
all right, so banjos 3 it is. I am fine with that. Let's hear it. Very nice. I feel like I should be on a porch.
A little more traditional than that speed metal banjo I pulled out the other week. So
speed
I wanted to get
metal banjo.
You know, it was death. It was.
Can we?
Grass.
You know, it'd be fun. So there's I can't remember the guy's name. He's a TikToker, but he takes metal tunes and turns them into yacht rock. I would love somebody out there. What's that?
You want yacht rock for the trailer park?
No, I don't. I would love, though. I'm sorry. As you were talking about this, it was like, and you were talking about speed metal banjo. I was like, wouldn't it be funny if somebody took Dracula and played that with a banjo, dig through the ditches?
So
anyway,
is you're challenging me to go learn how to play a banjo and Dracula?
Find some weird shit. Find some weird shit out there, Tony. You just find the weird shit, and we'll do our best to play it. All right. Let's get ourselves into the trailer park here. Nick Frost, he actually had a couple of trailers come out this week, and I picked the first one that I shared with y'all because it's a horror comedy. That's the only way I can think of to describe this thing. But not a horror comedy in like a big, loaded with funny ha-has horror comedy. It's this movie called The Getaway, where Nick Frost plays a man with his going on a getaway with his family to some remote island where there is a significant amount of creep factor involved with the people that live on this island. Clearly something is off, yet we're making jokes throughout the whole damn trailer, and the tone is so contrasting. Like, it's one of the weirdest, like, because there's black comedies and there's dark comedies. Like, A Werewolf Among Us is a horror comedy where the comedy really blends well. I don't know if it's just this trailer or just the style of humor, but, like, I'm sitting there and I'm, like, very confused about, like, how dark is this movie really going to be? So I go to IMDb thinking maybe IMDb can help me out with the description. And the description is just, a family's vacation to a remote getaway takes an unexpected turn when they discover the island they're on is inhabited by a serial killer. If you watch the trailer, you don't see that at all, because it looks like the whole damn town is in on something and there's some weird play going on. It's like weird but funny, and I don't know what to make of it, but I was intrigued and I wanted to weird you guys out a little bit too, so I shared it with the both of you. Dave, I trust Nick Frost. I've loved Nick Frost and his work with Simon Pegg, with like Shaun of the Dead, World's End, all that trilogy of comedies they did. But this was a little odd. Rated R for strong body violence and gore, language and sexual content.
It kind of gave me like the vibe of an American Werewolf in London. Like when the two guys show up at the slaughtered lamb and everybody's just kind of like looking at him side-eyed and not being very welcoming. And this is even worse than that, because it's like they're overtly hostile towards them from the word go.
Yes.
And it's like, why would you guys have picked this place without doing any sort of, it seems like, did you do any research into this? And like, what is going on with these people that they just, if you're an outsider, you know, it's beyond the cold shoulder or side eye. This is an odd one. You can tell it's a dark, very dark comedy. I'm not sure I'm going to check this one out, but it's interesting, but it's like, this is a strange concept, but okay. I like the cast involved, but yeah, it's a little off, I thought.
Subtle optimism continues. Okay. Through Frost's character, and it's hilarious. That's where the funniness comes from, in my opinion. I love a well-done dark comedy. I don't mind a little violence with it. Ew, she licked my face! She licked my face!
yeah, that was weird. It was funny, though. It was funny.
Yes, like, I am here for this one. I will watch this. It's only an hour and 26 minutes.
Yep.
So this will be on streaming soon enough. Hopefully, if you're what is this going to be in the movie theaters first, or I think?
I think so. Yeah, I think it's slated for a theatrical release, okay. But it's definitely going to be one of those that you might have to look for it a little.
Well, whoever's in charge of getting it to streaming, I have most of the popular streaming services, and I will be on vacation starting the Tuesday before Christmas until the 2nd. So if you could get it up on streaming at that time during my vacation, I would really appreciate it. I will give you a view. Just my promise to that person who's in charge. My promise.
And I will say this, genuinely surprised to hear that from you, Tony. I would not have pegged you to be the one the most in on this. Like that's stick a needle in your eye.
Yeah, I'm not going to the theater.
No, but still, like, even like there are definitely, like, we've all had this on this show though, guys, right? Like, there's been trailers that we've shared where it's like, look, I'm out, like, no way. I still haven't watched Madam Web, neither did anybody else.
Oh, why would you?
Yeah, why don't you subject yourself to that?
Yeah, Pat, you don't seem like the kind of guy that hates himself, so, you know,
I mean, I watch University of Illinois Athletics, so I do.
That's kind of like
that's right. Of, yeah.
We at least we've got basketball. All right, let's move on to a trailer that I actually am very, very interested in, and one that made me want to go and do some research and find a biography about Marlon Brando. As I think I'd shared a picture, like a set photo that had been shared, but you know, of a biopic where Billy Zane, you know, famous for playing the Phantom. Okay, nobody knows that. He was in Titanic. Done a lot of other stuff. Yes.
L.A. Law?
Yeah, I was intentionally picking like goofy, obscure shit.
LA Law. That's goofy and obscure now.
LA Law was quite the show though back in the day.
Oh, it was. Yeah, it was.
It's no Law and Order, but
it got what's his name Major League.
Yep, it definitely did get what's his name Major League. I think you're talking about Corbin Burnson.
Yes,
I do believe that's who it is. Waltzing with Brando is a film starring Billy Zane and of all people, was it
John Heder?
John Heder, Richard Dreyfuss. I was Richard Dreyfuss. And apparently, Tia Carrera.
Does Richard Dreyfuss sound like Retainer Boy?
Listen, Dave.
He is a Retainer Boy.
I could. If we needed to have people play people from the chair shot, you could play a Richard Dreyfuss, I think, Patrick.
Oh, thank you. And Tia Carrera, the big crush from Wayne's World for me. And maybe she's still.
Rosie O'Donnell. No, that's Stakeout 2. That was the second one.
No more. Not another Stakeout. We will not do another Stakeout. No, thank you. Appreciate it. But anyway, so, you know, they had this image come out of Billy Zane as Marlon Brando in The Godfather, like Marlon Brando playing The Godfather. And so I was like, oh, this is going to be a biopic. Look at the makeup. It's this phenomenal makeup workshop. And it really is. Like, he looks a ton like Marlon Brando in that era. And then we get this trailer, which if anybody's ever studied or knows anything about Brando, very much an eccentric human being. Like, if you want to see some bonkers shit, read about the stuff he pulled on the set of Apocalypse Now and the shit he pulled on the set of The Island of Dr. Moreau. Like, that dude fucked around with people and did not care. And so I was coming into this trailer not really knowing what the movie was really about, and you learn that it's about him trying to build the world's first ecologically perfect retreat on an uninhabited island in Tahiti. And John Heder is the architect that he hires to help him pull this off. And bonkersness ensues. So I'm in for this movie. I want to learn more about this period in Marlon Brando's life before I watch this movie. Like, this movie this trailer made me want to be like, I want, teach me more, internet. Teach me, I got to find a biography. Teach me more. I need to learn. And so with that, I pass the baton to Tunney because Dave went first on Getaway.
No, this looks fun. Rob Corddry's in this as well.
Yep.
It looks fun. Billy Zane looks great. As Marlon Brando, Camille Rizot, I'm not sure how to say, plays, I think, the young, girlfriend of Brando, I do believe. But yeah, this just looks fun. It looks like you kind of get to see, you know, Brando kind of didn't give a fuck, right? You talked about him fucking with people all the time, and the guy kind of thought, yeah, life's short, what the hell? There's other rumors about him, the same kind of rumors as Richard Pryor, if you're into those kind of Hollywood scenes. So he was kind of flamboyant and out there and open and wanted to do different things. So not surprising to me. This looks really fun, though.
Dave, you love The Godfather, so I'm sure you were excited for this.
I do, movie. Yeah. I mean, Brando's one of these guys who...
Dave, you should ask Patrick why he didn't come to you first.
Yeah. Why didn't you come? Why'd you go to the cops first? Make you an offer you can't refuse.
Because you went first. You went first on the last trailer. So
I know. Leave the gun.
No, I get
take
you.
The cannoli, honey.
I'll be leaving horses' heads in my bed. That's all I'm asking.
Yeah, I didn't know.
I ain't no band.
I didn't know who you were with, Pat. No, I didn't know who you were with. No, sure. Brando's always one of these guys who seemed a little eccentric, to say the least. And this movie really ties into that. It's like, because it's fun. You look at it, all the ambitions that he has and the things he wants to do. And these guys keep telling him all the problems that you don't have any potable water on here. You know, you don't have a way to get power here. And then he's like, I'm going to build a hotel here. Why would you build a hotel? How am I supposed to pay for all this? So I thought, that's pretty funny. I'm interested in it. Brando's, you know, kind of a polarizing figure in Hollywood, always has been, always will be. But this, like you're saying, Pat, this is a period of his life that it's like, well, I don't know a lot about this. I know the man from The Godfather and some of the other stuff he did, but this sounds it sounds so much like Brando that I got to probably check it out.
Yeah, 100%. And again, I think the makeup work alone should put you on Oscar watch, because he, like, there's look like Brando, and then there's he's dead ringer looks like Marlon Brando. It's very, very impressive. I think it's going to be great. Our next movie is something completely different, as the holiday season is now, the holiday season starts with Halloween. Halloween has come and gone. And while I am a firm believer in respecting the bird, and that Thanksgiving is damned important, we got a trailer for a Christmas movie titled Dear Santa, starring Jack Black and a young boy by the name of Robert Timothy Smith, who plays a child named Liam Turner. And Liam writes a letter to Santa Claus, but poor Liam spells poorly and actually writes a letter to Satan, played by Jack Black. And Satan on a lark decides to answer that letter, and hilarity ensues. I shared this trailer and immediately got thumbs up and fires from everybody, so I feel like this trailer went over in a positive way. This is one of the few times where I'm like, okay, we can just let Jack Black be Jack Black. Jack Black is Satan, and being Jack Black, doing Jack Black things is totally okay. This looks hilarious. Is it not Jordan Peele? Keegan-Michael Key? Is he? He plays the therapist for the young boy when they're talking about Satan and Santa Claus. I'm interested to. I can't wait to watch this movie. This movie looks really, really fun.
Yeah, I'll go. Yeah, this looks fun. I like it. Liam's a really bad speller, so, and dyslexic apparently too. So he inverts the letters, and instead of Santa, we're going to Satan. Yeah, like you're saying, this is a movie where Jack Black can really be himself and really steer into that skid that is Jack Black and do it as effectively as possible and make Satan, you know, Satan is a comedic sort of figure is, you know, that's going to be fun. We'll see how that works out. But I like it. This looks like a different, like a bad Santa-ish sort of vibe to this thing. So I'm with you guys. I think I'll probably want to be checking this one out because it looks just like a lot of fun.
I think it's going to be less bad Santa because that was really vulgar and adult, and a little more kind of Disney movie where the adult jokes are way over the kids' heads, if there are that many. The thing that reminded me when you say... I didn't really think about it in the way you said Jack Black can go out and be Jack Black. I just kind of watched it going, oh, Jack Black can go out there and really do a lot of what he wants to do. And I think you said it better, but that's kind of how it played in my brain. And I thought of Robin Williams. Like, he's kind of off the leash here in this one. Like, Robin Williams sometimes really got to explore his character and kind of go a little bit outside the box. Always wanted to. And I like Jack Black for that. This looks great. This kid looks hilarious as the straight man. Like, the premise is Jack Black's the devil and he cannot corrupt this kid. He just, as he tries, this kid just, at the end of whatever he's trying to do, the kid ends up being the Roadrunner, and Jack Black continually is Wile E. Coyote at the end of whatever he's trying to do. So this looks fun. I think this is going to be a classic, guys.
Yeah, I may have to amend the Christmas watch list. Depending on how this movie goes, because everybody knows I keep a list. I get through them all. So we'll see if Dear Santa makes the cut.
So we have two possible Christmas classics out now with this Bad Santa and.
I don't want to see Red One at all.
I think Red One's going to be good. You don't?
I don't know. I'm not feeling it.
Push you away from it. It's got J.K. Simmons. It's got, you know,
Chris Evans,
Captain Evil America.
Then it's got a naughty list. Post Malone, Jason Alexander, PJ Byrne, all in this movie as well.
Yeah, I mean, it did well this week too. Like, it made almost $30 million, which for a holiday flick is pretty solid. I don't know. It didn't excite me in the way that some other films have. What did excite me was being annoyed with Disney this weekend. Dave, who decided to pull the curtain back during the recording of Hockey Talk, and be like, I noticed a couple things weren't on the rundown for today because fucking D23 in Brazil happened.
Good job,
while
Dave.
While I was writing the rundown, and how was I to know that we were going to drop two trailers that might be worth talking about in D23 Brazil. Because let's be real, Dave, Tony, did you even know D23 Brazil was happening this weekend? Don't lie.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Yeah, no. So that's a lie.
No, I did.
Thank you, Dave. I appreciate your honesty.
I did know.
Okay.
I'm on X a lot.
We know this.
Cool story, bro. However, what we did...
No selling everything.
Yeah. You know, have a drink. Have a drink.
I love scotch.
Enjoy the drink. Scotch.
Here it goes down into my belly.
Anyway, we did get two trailers. We got yet another trailer for Captain America: Brave New World. Maybe this is the final trailer. We did get the date is in stone. Valentine's Day. Well, not Valentine's Day. Yeah, Valentine's Day. Yeah. February 14th. February 14th is the drop of Brave New World. Ton of exciting action-packed footage. I am interested to hear everybody's take, though. I gotta point out one thing. This did drive me nuts out of all this stuff. I do like it has a political thriller vibe. It looks like a Marvel film that's gonna take itself a little more seriously in this go around, that it's not. Not going to be too jokey. That we're saving that for a different trailer that we're about to talk about. I like Harrison Ford as General Ross out of the footage that I've seen so far. But there is a moment in this trailer where Sam is flying and something fires a bunch of missiles off, and he throws the shield to bounce it off of like multiple missiles to blow them up before catching the shield and like plowing through them. And I know he practiced on trees and gym mats.
All
so
that training,
really important.
All that training
he
came in handy.
Got it all done. But I was also like, come on, man. Like, but Tutty's like, you know, I like the look of Red Hulk. I like that we got a good look at Red Hulk. You know, there's been a lot of rumors surrounding this film with the talk of all the reshoots that have happened. There was a even a blogger that I saw that was posting about D23 in Brazil. They perpetuated a rumor that has since been disproven that Giancarlo Esposito was suiting back up to do even more reshoots as recently as last week. That was debunked. That is not that is not true. It sounds like he was getting into the suit for a public appearance, not to be doing reshoots. But there is a lot of concern about how this film is tested. There's been a lot of concern about the amount of changes and reshoots. I turned to my most reliable source when it comes to whether or not I should watch a movie. And that's the Little O'Dowd. And the Little O'Dowd was like, I want to see this movie. And so kids, take it from the Little O'Dowd. Give it a shot. I think the trailer looks good. I think the trailer looks good. I think the movie looks interesting. And I'm for it. So me personally, I'm on board with Captain America: Brave New World, and I hope that this is Anthony Mackie's chance to shine, because it looks like, to me, it looks, at the very least, it looks good enough for me to go to the theater, and at least I'll own if it's trash and I wasted the money, because I do want to see this. Tony, why don't you go ahead and go first, then we'll go to Dave.
I think no matter what happens, this movie's going to look great in 3D.
Yes.
I mean, like, if you have the option and it works out in your schedule, will you not go see it in 3D?
Yeah, I don't see why you wouldn't.
I think I saw the Harrison Ford quote to Anthony Mackie that Mackie talked about. I don't know if we're going to talk about that later or not, or where I can't remember where I saw that. But like,
no, you can talk about it now, where he talked about making Mackie look better. Yeah.
I'm just here to make you look good. Like, and this is maybe the best wrestling reference we've ever dropped on this show, is that guys like Harrison Ford, who have had an amazing career and are over, should always put younger talent coming into a new role over as best as they can, especially when they believe in that person. So that felt really good to me that Harrison had that much confidence in Anthony, especially when we've questioned what this movie's going to be like, to be honest. And it can be, if this movie's successful and people eat it up, and it could be huge for Marvel. Like, literally, this could be a huge win for Marvel if they get this one over with a home run, because we've kind of been a little skeptical about this one.
Yeah, I think that's fair. Dave, go ahead.
No, to tie into exactly what Tony's talking about, Harrison Ford saying he's doing this for Anthony Mackie tells me that although this is Harrison's first foray into the MCU, he gets it. And exactly what Tony's saying, that this is a make or break sort of movie for Marvel, because you are trying to establish a new Captain America, which is no easy task with the ghost of Steve Rogers and Chris Evans still lingering out there. And this is one where you got to figure wherever they're going from here, they really have to get this one right. And having Harrison Ford there to say, I'm here to put you over, buddy. I'm passing the torch to you in this one. I think that's very important. Like you said, the views of Red Hulk, you get to see him in all of his glory and how he comes to be. Any doubt that we are not having a major fight on Tiamat Island are erased completely in this trailer, because while you could barely tell in the earlier one, it's front and center. You see the hand in numerous places. You see the head in numerous places. So the fight for adamantium, we're assuming, is full on in this one. Yeah, I feel a little bit more encouraged about this after watching this trailer than because, you know, I was kind of lukewarm the first time. This one has me feeling a little bit better. Question, though, is that Isaiah Bradley he's talking to at the beginning of the trailer? Okay.
Yes, Isaiah Bradley. So I think the impetus for this movie and where it gets started is President Ross is giving a speech of some sort. Isaiah Bradley is there. And he like stands up and attacks the president. And then the follow up is him in prison afterwards talking to Sam. The only thing, you know, I was trying to think of this. Captain America has already been arrested once. That was a little thing. It was like, you got arrested in Civil War. Now we're arresting him again in Brave New World. Like there's a little bit of some shadow and shading there. It's a little thing. It's not a deal breaker by any sense of the imagination, but there are some things here and there where it's like, but I don't think that should preclude what I think looks like a pretty strong movie, pretty solid movie. And I look forward to seeing what Anthony Mackie can do in this film. The other first look that they gave us at D23, and this is the headlining thing that was dropped at D23. And after we talk about this trailer, I am going to talk about a couple other sort of news and notes, things that happened out of the Marvel presentation that are important to pay attention to, is we got our first long look at the Thunderbolts. And this was actually interesting because it was a combination trailer / first look, because it opens with a scene from the film with Red Guardian driving the Red Guardian limo services vehicle, holding Yelena Belova, Ghost, and U.S. agent in the vehicle. They are they're being chased by what appear to be government vehicles when Bucky comes to the rescue, but he doesn't come to the rescue. And then we cut away into a trailer where we get an introduction of each of the characters. We get their names. We get to see what happened. We finally see what happened to Avengers Tower. We now know that it was bought by, I can't remember her name, but Julie Louis Dreyfus's character's name. Contessa, yeah. We got our first look at Bob, also known as the Sentry. That trailer looked like a lot of fun. It looked like fun in a different way than Suicide Squad. It looked fun in a different way than Guardians of the Galaxy. There is early speculation that the name of that asterisk next to the Thunderbolts is going to eventually be a name change at the end of the movie to the Dark Avengers. We'll see. I mean, maybe the Dark Avengers, Bob was a part of the Dark Avengers. Bucky was a part of the Dark Avengers. So it's certainly possible. But again, I turned to my right while watching this trailer to get the seal of approval from one little O'Dowd. And he was like, he was like, I'm interested in this one. He was like, I want to see that one. So I think they might have a winner on their hands, because little O'Dowd, big thumbs up from the little O'Dowd when it came to the Thunderbolts trailer. We'll start with Dave this time. Are you more excited about Thunderbolts now that you've seen footage?
I was always a little bit more on the Thunderbolts side of the fence in Captain America. But this is a long trailer, 3.5 minutes long. Lots of funny stuff going on. You know, go faster. The car's like basically bottomed out at 45 miles an hour. That was fun. Red Guardian.
He hits that button.
Yeah.
Hits the button. Down.
Yeah. David Harbour is going to be great as Red Guardian. Yelena's in this. You've got a lot of really fun elements. It does, you know, it feels like a better variation. Yeah. I mean, there's some Suicide Squad Task Force X elements in this, but it looks really, really good. You know, seeing Ghost come back, that's going to be pretty cool because that was one of the characters that I really liked from the Ant-Man series of movies. But yeah, it looks like just a fun movie. Sentry being involved is going to be great to get that character involved in this whole thing, especially when you figure we're going to Secret Wars pretty soon. So I got no complaints about this one. I love the cast. You know, I'm a big fan of Wyatt Russell, especially after watching his work in Monarch, Legacy of Monsters, he was excellent in that. And I mean, he was great in Falcon and Winter Soldier too, but he's like this character that I think is going to grow on people more in this movie. And he's the flawed Captain America. And they make a point of that, of noting that in the trailer. I think he might be a show stealer for this one, but it looks excellent. And I'm excited to see where Thunderbolts ends up.
It's funny. Cause to me, it feels like, you obviously can't replace like the Guardians of the Galaxy, but like not in the role that they have, but like in the role in the MCU as this lovable team that's kind of mismatched and put together and stuff. They kind of start to fill that void that's going to be gone now if we're going to keep going with this team like you guys talked about. But I think their importance is how much they connect everything. There's some underlying stuff you talked about, Sentry and things of that nature. But I've always been kind of looking more forward to see if Anthony Mackie's Cap is going to catch on, and I hope it will now. But this is definitely something that seems more important and tying a lot of things together.
Yeah, and speaking of tying things together, D23, while at Brazil, you know, while having these two pieces of footage, it also showed some, I don't know if they actually showed footage from Fantastic Four, but they definitely talked about Fantastic Four First Family. But Feige made a couple of pretty significant announcements that I feel like we need to talk about on this this episode at D23 in Brazil. The first of which is he talked about the X-Men, and specifically he talked about how the X-Men are going to be the significant force moving forward coming out of Secret Wars. And so there is a build towards Secret Wars that's happening now, where the X-Men will become the focal point, more so than they already are starting to be in Secret Wars. So that was announcement number one. And I'm gonna give you both announcements that are at least both things that he said that I felt were pretty significant. The other thing he talked about was the Marvel release schedule and the future Marvel release schedule and the way that it's going to work now. And he said on Saturday that moving forward, it's going to be 2 movies, 3 shows. And so from a movie sound standpoint, that sounds palatable. From a show sound standpoint, it feels doable. I'll let you guys go either way you want to, whether you want to react to we're kind of like the Avengers are still going to be around, but the X-Men are going to be kind of becoming the focus after Secret Wars. Or if you want to talk about this schedule revamp and where they're going from there. Either one of you, like, feel free to take whichever one you want. Dave is pointing at you, Tony, so we'll let you go first. But I think these are both pretty significant pieces of information for us moving forward as we start to watch the next few Marvel films.
I think when you make the X-Men more significant, you take a lot of the pressure off of what Marvel's already been trying to do. Because we're not tired of X-Men yet, where we might be tired a little bit of some of the other stuff. So it's a great way to continue to tell more stories without getting people exhausted over certain characters. But you're not really going to lose anything. That's a lot. 3 shows and 2 movies, that's a lot. It's great. I love it because we're here doing this. We love doing this. We do this every week. And I want stuff to cover. Right? This is like a late night talk show host having a good election season to talk about. So we would like to continue to have great things to talk about. And whether it's Star Wars, DC, or Marvel, and we've kind of, that's our main 3-pronged attack. That's our trident here on Bandwagon Nerds, to say the least. You know, keep it coming.
Don't forget your favorite show, Tony, The Witcher. I mean, that's one of the pillars, too. So
this is one of those moments where I put the trident and I look at Dave with it, not quite pointed at him, but I'm just like, oh, hey, I got the trident right now, buddy. Talk about that again.
I think Tunney's hit a really good point about shifting the focus to X-Men. And it's like he's saying, you know, people that we're tired of. But I'll take it a little step further. X-Men are people we haven't seen before. And the Avengers are a whole group of people that not only have we seen them before, but part of the problem is replacing them that has caused a lot of the issues and people being trepidatious about, can we replace this iconic group? You don't have that problem with the X-Men. So you can really kind of like reset the whole process. Go ahead, Tony.
We're even recasting them.
Yeah, right. Right. So with X-Men, you've got original stuff where you don't have to worry about it. Let's get the casting right first. We got original stories we can tell. There are no like preset expectations because they're kind of with a blank slate sort of thing. So I think that's pretty smart if you're really worried about, will the new Avengers be able to carry the day? So it's like, well, we can use X-Men and kind of reset everything. So I think that's smart. The release schedule may be a little bit ambitious. I think I would have preferred to see 2 and 2. I think having that third TV show is a little bit much.
Think, through an animation,
here's where I'm going to disagree with you.
I apologize, Pat.
It's easier to pull together a television show than it is to pull together a movie in the same timetable. That's why I think it makes more sense to go 3.
Well, yeah, like, to that extent. And I think they go ahead, Pat.
Well, and depending on how they do their release schedule, like if they do one, if it's going to be an early year and a late year, and then TV shows in between, or, you know, streaming shows in between, I don't think that's nearly as, like, I don't think you're stretching your talent as thin as you were before when, like, they were trying to cram, like, series immediately followed by series immediately followed by series, the movie thrust in between.
One,
like,
to one to one.
They're finally kind of letting stuff breathe a little. Go ahead, Tony.
You talk, real quick, Dave, because I want you to finish what you were talking about, but you talk about, like, you know, Daredevil and She-Hulk and all that stuff being like Moon Knight, we're going to do that again. Plus animation is the other point I wanted to make real quick, was you have What If, you have X-Men 97 coming up, 98 likely, or whatever you're going to do there. So I think 3 is fine. I think 2 live action, 1 animation, that kind of catches you up with DC strong suit a little bit. Like, hey, we're going to come at you with a good animation one every year.
Well, and on top of that, if you're going to stick to your release schedule and you want to get Secret Wars done when you're trying to get it done, you've got to do this. And on that note, I mean, maybe you're not doing enough, because how are you going to get to where you want to go at the scheduled time frame?
Are you guys okay with telling a really big part of any of these stories in the animated world?
Yes.
Like, are you guys okay with, I mean, like, you know what I'm saying? There could be we're like, hey,
well, we're going to see it in DC though. We're going to see it in DC first.
Right.
So that should be interesting. I think many people expected it out of X-Men 97. Like, I think there was a lot of people who were wondering if X-Men 97 was going to cross in the MCU, and it didn't really. One other thing I just want to mention, don't want to really discuss it, I just want to mention it because Kevin Feige mentioned it. Miles Morales came up. Miles Morales, he said that the third Spider-Verse movie is currently in production and that we could see Miles Morales after that is done. There's speculation he could be involved in Tom Holland's final run of Spider-Man films. So wait and see there. All right, one last story before we go into our second final commercial break. It was also a big week over in Japan for Takashi Yamazaki. Now, for those of you who don't know who Takashi Yamazaki is, I certainly do, because I've been preaching. I think, Dave, did you finally see Godzilla Minus One?
Oh, I saw it like that first week it was out in the theaters.
Right. Godzilla Minus One, which took the United States and the film world by storm, becoming the first Godzilla film to win an Academy Award. Now, granted, it was for visual effects, which is a crime because it was a phenomenal movie in its own right. To only be able to be nominated for visual effects was nuts. But this week was a big week for Takashi Yamazaki. First, the studio, the OG Godzilla studio in Japan, Toho, announced Friday that the 38th Godzilla film will once again be led by Takashi Yamazaki. This is a confirmation of a rumor and a hope that a lot of people had, that he would be part of it. And so the fact that Yamazaki is back, that he gets to direct the next Godzilla movie and tell another story, I think is outstanding. And I hope that he gets the opportunity to replicate what has really been for Toho in Japan a really strong run of Godzilla films, with Godzilla Minus One, with God, what's the other one that I'm forgetting right now? The last two Toho Godzilla films have been outstanding. And having Yamazaki do that is just, you know, to do another one is awesome. The other piece of news that Yamazaki himself revealed, and I shared in an article, Shin Godzilla, that was the other one that that Toho put out that's really, really good, was announced that Yamazaki has had a meeting with one Kevin Feige to talk about a possible future, whatever that means. Give him Fin Fang Foom. If we're gonna give him, if we're gonna do kaiju,
see, I like how you break that out when Ray's not here to just, like, you know, lose his mind.
I don't know that that would be what he would want to do, or the, you know, and that's just stereotyping based on the film he's famous for. But, you know, again, I want to see him follow up his first film. But he clearly makes a great film, or at least he made one great film. Hopefully, he can make two. But that, you know, finding hot directors and up and coming directors, that should be a hallmark of an MCU. It should be a hallmark of a series of films we're going to talk about after the commercial break in the Star Wars universe. That's what they should be doing, because that's how you keep things fresh and good. And one of the other things I think has been part of Marvel's problem and is a concern is dipping too far back into the Russo brothers as well. Get some guys we've never heard of. So, two pieces of news, big news for Yamazaki. Dave, your reaction to either a Godzilla, you know, another Godzilla round with Yamazaki at the helm, or Yamazaki directing a Marvel film?
I mean, a Godzilla Minus One sequel or whatever they're going to do with it. Yes, he did such a tremendous job with that. I just hope that, you got to figure he's going to get a much bigger budget this time around, that I hope that the next movie doesn't lose some of the charm that made Godzilla Minus One so good, which was kind of that stripped down, almost old school feel to it that made that movie so fantastic. So hopefully it doesn't, you know, go over commercialized, but I'm all for anything else in that universe at this point. Getting him in the MCU, sure. Like you're saying, we need fresh directors, younger directors, people with a different sort of worldview that can bring some certain different elements to the MCU that perhaps hasn't been considered before. You know, maybe like, you know, if they're going to do something with, well, I don't know, like, yeah, you're saying Fin Fang Foom would be a good one, but something really creature heavy, maybe like Doctor Strange or something might be somewhere where they can go with that. Or even Shang-Chi, if they're going to do, because, I mean, we had that big debate when that came out. Was that Fin Fang Foom? Was it not? That sort of thing. So, I think it's good. I like the idea of getting these.
Spoiler alert. It was not Fin Fang
Foom. It was not. It was not. But,
thank you.
Yeah.
Who was right again?
You were right on that. But now you're trying to inject Fin Fang Foom into consciousness again. So,
I mean, he is a kaiju director. He did make the highest grossing kaiju film in the United States of all time. So he knows what he's doing. He can handle the material.
Yes.
Sonny, your thoughts?
I instantly thought of, in the most respectful way, I don't know how you would take this as a disrespectful thing, of most recently the Dodgers and the Angels bringing Shohei Ohtani to you know, from Japan to the Angels, right? Like, yeah. These are two of the best cinematic places in the world, where two of the greatest baseball places in the world. How apropos that we covered Game 7 today between the Yankees and Red Sox. But, like, he's still on a winning streak over there trying to finish a certain legacy. But Kevin Feige's like, when you're ready, why don't you come over here and add a few bucks to your pocket and help us out along the way. I could see him more so being like the director of Epic Battles as opposed to like being a director too. Like the guy that is on every set is just like, ooh, we want to do the more epic stuff like this. But I definitely see down the road him getting his own Marvel project. I think Feige's interested in that.
Yeah, we'll have to see. And of course, this is all like they had a meeting. Could be nothing. So it's interesting that it's out there. All right, we're going to take our second commercial break. When we come back, we are going to, man, we've been talking about Star Wars a lot lately. We talked about Star Wars last week. We're going to keep talking about Star Wars because more news hit this week. And then we're going to say a trio of goodbyes as we lost quite a few famous folks this week that were noteworthy. So stick around for that. We'll be back soon. You're listening to Bandwagon Nerds here on the Chairshot Radio Network, part of the Chairshot.com.
This is your boy Kenny Killer telling you to make sure you check out thechairshot.com, bringing you breaking news, interviews, podcasts galore, everything pro wrestling. Make sure you check it out, thechairshot.com.
Back here on Bandwagon Nerds, Patrick O'Dowd, David Ungar, PC Tunney. Make sure, again, you head over to prowrestlingtees.com/chairshot to invest in a chair shot shirt design. $19.99 for sure. Get it soft style for a few dollars more. It'll feel great on your giblets. Gentlemen, Star Wars news won't stop. Which, was it ever going to stop? By the way, also noted at D23, Andor Season 2's date has been announced. I shared it in the chat. I don't have the chat in front of me. If one of you does, you can fire that date off. But very excited for that. My favorite series as of late. I think it's in March.
April 22nd. This 2025.
I had my mic down, damn it.
You gotta be quicker, Tony. So, quicker on the draw, buddy.
Actually,
in some things.
Tony, I gotta tell you, I'm glad to see that you felt the pain of the repeat post by one Raymond S. Cashington Esquire. I'm like immediately after you posted it. It was hilarious.
Oh, it's fun. It's a great dynamic. It's what makes it probably the funnest thread that I'm in, DM style. I feel in every other DM thread I am in for every other show or whatever kind of group I'm in, I don't feel any pressure, but there's definitely a pressure to be good in the Bandwagon Nerds and on top of things. Present. You need to be, like, that word comes to mind. You need to be present in the Bandwagon Nerds chat, right? Like, man, you can't be coming in there a day late, an hour late, or even a minute late on a post because you're going to get a frowny face.
You get called for it, man. We're going to let you know. And we're also going to let you know that Lucasfilm, per deadline, is adding an entire new trilogy of Star Wars films to a you know what? There's so many Star Wars projects being talked about and rumored out there that this next trilogy could be episodes 10, 11, or 12. They could be the next three episodes in the Skywalker saga. Although that has quickly been had some cold water dumped on it. Like Lucasfilm has also been like, not necessarily. It's gonna be produced. It's gonna be written by Simon Kinberg, producer of many X-Men films, as well as Carrie Beck, Dave Filoni. It's gonna be produced. Produced by Kathleen Kennedy, of course. Whatever. I get that. For me, this is truly three more Skywalker movies, I'm gonna hand it over to Tony because if this is true, this goes back to what I was complaining about last week and what we've been saying, and Tony in particular has really been banging the drum on this. This isn't what Star Wars fans want, right? Like, is this what they want?
Dave's been the one banging the drum.
What? Oh, I thought that was you.
No, I think that's Rey. I'm okay with more Jedi Skywalker stuff, but like, I don't know.
My fault. My bad.
No, here's my thing. I think you confused that with me going, because I said I didn't want another Skywalker saga.
Right.
Right?
Okay.
But I'm okay with the Jedi. I'm okay with Rey. But here's my biggest thing. And I didn't exactly execute exhibiting this to those listening, is why do we have to commit to three? Can't we just have one fucking movie come out and then we'll go from there? Right? Kind of Dave kind of brought that point up, is let's choose one trope, execute it well, and see what we can do different after that. I'm so tired of the pressure of three fucking movies. Like Marvel and DC, like, they're stuck having to plan shit out for their fans because we're so fucking crazy about that shit, when we'd be so better off. It's why I don't like to see trailers that are so long, or try to stay away from trailers for movies that I know I'm going to see anyway. I really don't want to know. Just get me going in the right direction so I don't over-anticipate it. Do you know what I'm saying? They're shooting themselves in the foot.
I do.
They're like, hey, here's the next trilogy. Wait, you don't even have a fucking solid design for the first fucking part of it.
Yeah, the notion that this has to be a trilogy or nothing really boxes them in to a place where expectations are in a certain place, and just kind of like, this is where we're going to go. And I agree with Tunney. It's like, it shouldn't be that way. It's like, get a good movie out there and then go from there. If you want to make a trilogy, great. You want to do 5-6 movies? You want to go on a Harry Potter-esque run or a MCU-esque run based on a storyline? Fantastic. When it's done, it's done. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, the notion of continuing the Skywalker saga is going to appeal to some people, right? There's going to be some people who are like, yeah, I'm familiar with this. I want to see what happens next. But most of us have bemoaned the fact that they don't know what the hell they're doing. They don't know where they want to go. They have nothing other than this to fall back on. It's a safety blanket that has a bunch of holes and is almost in tatters right now, because it used to work. But now if you're just falling back on the Skywalker whole legacy of things, a lot of people are sick of that and want to see Star Wars go in a different direction. Something fresh, something different. Expand the universe without, no pun intended as far as the extended universe. So but I mean, like, when you're reading the article, there's a lot of people quickly disproving that this is just the Skywalker legacy being continued, or trying to debunk that. Hopefully that's true, because I think I want to see something different. And no matter what they do, they're still going to make the Rey movie. I mean, that seems evident from the article. They're still going in that direction with Daisy Ridley. Fine. But yeah, I mean, to say we're going to do a trilogy and it's going to be like this, and maybe it won't be the Skywalker stuff, and maybe it will. You got to start somewhere. You got to get some sort of foothold. And they haven't done that since Revenge of the Sith was the last one you can really say, yeah, they nailed that one. But yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, it's here's the other thing. Let's talk about, Tunney's point about one, maybe let's make one movie is probably the most apropos, because here we go. It's been 5 years since The Rise of Skywalker. And let's see what's been. So Patty Jenkins deal done, dead, gone all the way.
That was Star Wars Squadron.
Rogue Squadron done.
I like that movie.
What?
Oh, I like Squadron.
Yeah, I would have liked it too.
But no, I did like it.
We didn't have. You're saying Rogue One.
Oh, sorry, Rogue One. My bad.
Yeah, maybe Rogue. I can't remember what her. Yeah, the Patty Jenkins film did not happen. Let's see what we've got. Project in the works. A purported trilogy including three films previously announced at Star Wars Celebration Europe in 2023. Dave mentioned the Rey film. James Mangold's Dawn of the Jedi movie. Dave Filoni's Mandoverse team-up film, widely believed to be a riff off the classic Timothy Zahn movies in Heir to the Empire trilogy. A Lando Calrissian movie. Taika Waititi's Star Wars movie, John Favreau's Mandalorian and Grogu, supposed to release in 2026. They still haven't gotten rid of Rian Johnson's trilogy, which surprises me, given how popular his contribution to episode eight was. Outside of me, I liked it. I would go see Rian Johnson's trilogy. Rogue Squadron scrapped. There was supposed to be something from Guillermo del Toro that's been scratched. Like, The Acolyte only gets one season. They're doing fuck all.
Can I throw something out to you guys? Let me ask you. does Star Wars need a James Gunn-like character like DC did to just have one guy to try and pull all this shit together?
Wasn't that supposed to be John Favreau or Filoni? Wasn't that what the goal was?
Long as they, look, I'm going to say this. As long as they've got Kathleen Kennedy there, there's going to be a problem. Because I don't know if she's got the right vision. That's just me.
We don't know what her vision is.
That's exactly
we don't know what her vision
right.
is.
Yeah, exactly.
And maybe that was never the point. Maybe it was supposed to be Filoni. Maybe Kathleen Kennedy's just the producer. Like, we don't know. It's just, it's frustrating.
And I would trust,
him. They keep announcing this stuff. They just keep announcing so much stuff. And, like, none of the stuff seems to be going anywhere. And they just keep throwing more, like, let's do this. Let's do this. We're going to do this. Who's doing these things? Where are they going? Oh, it's awful. I watch I listen to a podcast. It's one of my favorite listens out there. It's called What Went Wrong. And What Went Wrong is a podcast about movie making. And every episode is a film where they talk about the process of getting that film from concept to screen. And sometimes the movies are big hits. Sometimes they're utter failures. But it talks about a lot about the development hell that films go through to get made. And this is just nothing but development hell. And like, people need to stop.
The problem is Filoni is the chief creative officer at Lucasfilm, but Kathleen Kennedy is the president of Lucasfilm. And there it lies the problem, where we're not getting one vision. We're either getting two visions mashed together or one vision that's been compromised by somebody else's power.
And people are very hostile towards the Disney take on Star Wars. I mean, we've heard that numerous times, that ever since Disney got a hold of it, it's this, 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 and this. And there is some validity to that, that they have kind of dropped the ball and fumbled it in a few places. But like you're saying, Pat, they're just throwing all this stuff out there, all this stuff out there. It's like, wait a second. The Star Wars timeline is too disjointed. You've got all these projects going in all sorts of different directions. Like, what am I supposed to be watching and where am I supposed to be going? And this is, it is overkill. It's overkill of nothing, if that makes any sense. It's like, we're just going to bury you with a lot of nothing that's really happening.
Yeah. Maybe if we just try to get you excited about all these projects, one or two of them will hit and we'll call it. All right. Let's head into our last story, melancholy story that it is. We had a trio of folks in various parts of the nerdosphere pass this week. The biggest name of the bunch, the legendary producer in the world of music, Quincy Jones, passes away at the age of 91, father of Rashida Jones, actor, producer in her own right. Folks, if you don't know much about Quincy Jones, Rashida Jones did a documentary about her dad. It's on Netflix. You should check it out. He was a genius before he ever started pairing up with his most famous collaboration in music, that with him and Michael Jackson, producing Off the Wall, Thriller, and Bad, back to back. You want to talk about a run. That's a hell of a run. So we lost Quincy Jones. We also lost artist Greg Hildebrand, comic artist known for his X-Men work as well as movie posters. And I shared this with the group. Greg Hildebrand was the artist who designed the iconic Star Wars poster that everybody sees and knows and remembers from the 70s, with Luke Skywalker holding the lightsaber over his head with the silhouette of Darth Vader in the background and all that. And perhaps my favorite movie poster of all time, he did the movie poster for Clash of the Titans with Perseus holding the head of Medusa. It's they're iconic poster, terrific, terrific artist. And then last but not least, horror icon, the Candyman himself, Tony Todd, passed away relatively young, died in his 60s. I want to say like 68, somewhere there. He was not as old as I thought he was. Oddly enough, my favorite Tony Todd role, though, is not one where he's a lead actor. He's one of the two mercenaries in The Rock that turns on Ed Harris. And he's so menacing in that movie. Like, he got to channel his Candyman character as a military mercenary. So most known for Candyman. All three of them lost this week. And just big parts of different aspects. Oh, sorry, he was 69. Tony Todd was 69. Just big parts of different corners of the nerdosphere. So, fellas, just a brief moment. Comment, if you wish, on any of these icons of the entertainment industry. I'll start with Dave. Oh, no, Dave's pointing at Tony. Dave wants Tony.
I know. Yeah, Quincy Jones, a musical genius. Was he influential with Motown and all that stuff, right? I mean, that, or maybe.
Dude, he was influential in so much shit, yeah. Man. It's hard to lose track. But yes,
yeah.
He was very much a part of. He was a band leader. He did jazz. He was a composer. He helped launch Will Smith in The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air.
Yeah.
Like, he did it all, man. Like, he did it all. He was so good at it.
That's a huge loss to the music industry. But 91, that's a hell of a run. He, like you said, he did it all. He was involved in everything, you know. Some of the most celebrated stars of all time. You mentioned Michael Jackson. Wouldn't have been Michael Jackson without him. So that's a huge loss. Greg, you know, the posters you mentioned, especially Clash of the Titans, I'm with you on that, because that's one of my all-time favorite movies, is the 80s version of Clash of the Titans with Harry Hamlin as Perseus and just the stop-motion stuff that they did with Medusa. Tony Todd, yeah, Candyman comes to mind, but I think the role that I really loved him as, the mortician in Final Destination. He was so good at that just the where he's talking about death and how you can cheat it and you don't want to fuck with that Mac Daddy. That was really awesome. So yeah, that's a big loss. 69 is a little too young, that's for sure.
You talk about Tony Todd. I think one of the favorite things I've seen is a meme with Freddy Krueger, Jason Voorhees, and Michael Myers standing over his grave. I think that's
it, Tony. No credit given to me. Thank you.
I've been on so much social media, Dave. But I think that's an excellent, you know, tribute to what he meant to that genre. You guys already talked about Hildebrand and what he meant, or Hildegard?
Hildebrand.
I got it right the first time. And then nobody really thinks about what Quincy Jones meant to the movie industry and how he lent a lot of the things he did to different movies. If you go back and check that out as well. So yeah, it's quite the trio. Unfortunately, they'll be missed, but think about, you know, all the great things we got from them.
Very true. 28 Grammys.
It's got an Oscar too, doesn't he? Everything.
I was actually looking up to see if he had won an EGOT.
No, I think he just fell short with a Tony.
No, he's won a Tony. He won a Tony for, he is an EGOT winner. He won a Tony in 2016 for The Color Purple. So it took him 52 years, but he won his Emmy in 1977, Grammy in 1964 was his first Grammy, Oscar in 95, and a Tony in 2016. So he completed his EGOT in 2016 in what they call a non-competitive EGOT, because it was all on the production side of things. But it doesn't matter. That just tells you how important he was in the industry, in the entertainment industry. Like, I'm going to push this again. The documentary that Rashida Jones did about him on Netflix is very much worth watching. I mean, it's, you know, clearly she loves her dad, and it's a love letter to her father. But it's a really good watch and worth taking the time, because that dude. Oh, he invented Vibe, or he developed Vibe, the magazine Vibe. Like, that was him, Quincy Jones. Like, it's crazy. He just did it all. So, great, great stuff. Okay, Lift Your Glass, Happy Trails, Quincy Jones, Greg Hildebrand, Tony Todd. See you on the other side. And now we're going to move on to what you're watching. And this week we'll start with Tony. Tony was excited to talk about SNL. So let's hear at least about SNL today.
Yeah, great.
What you watching, man?
Great episode last night, SNL. My time clock has been off a little bit. I've been waking up really early because of the, daylight savings thing, which I don't like. I think we should turn it forward in the spring and stop messing with it. Just leave it alone. So I was up very early this morning, and I watched Saturday Night Live. Bill Burr hosted. Really nice set to start the show. I thought the opening skit was hilarious and a great way to kind of try to bring America back together. McGee was the musical guest. It was okay, but it was a fun show. They touched on some political stuff, but they had a good time. As for what else I'm watching, just the same old stuff. Haven't had a lot of time. Hell's Kitchen, The Floor, Shark Tank is back for another season. Mark Cuban's there. So, yeah, that and, of course, wrestling. So, you know.
Cool. Mr. Ungar?
Yeah, Buff Trump was fun on the cold open.
Yes, the cold was fun, wasn't it? I think it they did. You agree? So you saw it. That was the way the show. I thought that was a great way to just kind of like, hey, here we are. Because after big political things, after big events in America, we kind of turned to Saturday Night Live to see what the temperature of everything is going to be. So they kind of threw the interns under the bus for the amount of Trump
they did
make fun of they did, which was great. So it was funny.
It was well done. It was, you know, you could tell the real feelings about it, and the sarcasm was there in a very humorous way. And it's all right. You know, that's fine. But the only thing I watched this week of significance is I finally got a chance to watch Godzilla Kong, the New Empire. And that was really good. That was pretty good. I enjoyed that. I thought it was better than I thought it was going to be. You know, it kind of just continues where they're going with that thing. And I told my wife, it's like, it's interesting to me that they're straddling this fine line, and don't get me wrong, it is nowhere near on the level of Godzilla minus one, you know, that sort of thing. This is a different Godzilla, but trying to make Godzilla kind of a hero to the world because he's protecting us from all the other Titans, while at the same time, absolutely annihilating any fucking city that he's in and leaving nothing but destruction in his wake. It's like, that's a really hard, it's a fine line to balance there between hero and absolute menace. So, but I liked the movie. I thought it was a really, you know, a good next step in all that stuff. So yeah, I enjoyed it. I was entertained, as we would say in the wrestling industry.
Very nice. I got around to watching Music by John Williams finally over the week. That's that documentary I was very, very excited about. It's on Disney Plus. Glad that I watched it. I think I mentioned this. I had no idea that one of his kids was the lead singer for Toto, or was amongst one, or is a lead singer for Toto. But Music by John Williams, very, very good. Very much, again, much like what I was talking about with Rashida Jones' documentary, it's a love letter to John Williams, and rightfully so. That man as a composer was awesome. And when the only controversy in his life was the Boston Pops didn't like him for 3 months, it tells you all you need to know. One of the good guys in Hollywood, and we will be lesser for it when he passes. He's 91. He's a treasure. I was going to watch the Chicago Bears and the New England Patriots after this. I recorded the game, and then I learned that the Bears decided to punt for 3 hours. So that's exciting as they lose to the 2-7 Patriots. Awesome. Did awesome. The Bears, they're losing 16-3 with 4:32 left in the game. The Bears are losing to the Patriots.
And the Patriots have the ball in the red zone.
Yeah. Hey. The Bears... But no. Right. No. I'm going to sit with it. Patriots have 2 wins and Drake May is their fucking quarterback.
Can I just say
2 wins? Did it. 2 wins. Nope. No, there's no just saying. They gave up 6 sacks to a defense. That's a fucking sin. They scored 3 points against the New England Patriots at home. No. I also watched Mystery Science Theater 3000, The Gauntlet. I've been continuing to watch that on Netflix as well, and I'm going to watch a little Rings of Power and Shrinking after I get off this call, because God help me, I can't watch the Patriots and the Bears game and be anything but depressed. I'd have to eat my feelings, and I don't want to do that. So there you have it. That's what you're watching. And that brings us to our final go-around around the show. So, gentlemen, before we get out of here, tell everyone where they can find you on the social media and on the Chair Shot Radio Network. Dave, you
can
go first.
Find me on X at Attitude Ag. That is at Attitude AGG. Facebook.com/Attitude of Regression. And at Attitude of Regression, all one word, on Instagram and Threads.
You can follow me at PC Tunney. Continue to listen to everything Chair Shot Radio Network on all of your favorite streaming platforms. And watch out for upcoming a monumentous occasion you cannot miss. The 300th episode of Attitude of Aggression is coming to the Chair Shot Radio Network very, very soon. That will be advertised highly. Follow me at PC Tunney.
Or at Chuck Snow.
Very nice.
Yeah, well, yeah. Chuckity
Congratulations bucket. On the upcoming 300th episode, Dave. Well
done. You're invited, Pat.
Sure I am. And you can follow me on the...
Do those. He doesn't do those. Him and Greg don't show up for those.
Call my agent.
Actually, you know what we could do? We could probably record something after this show today. A congratulations message that we could play during that show.
But what you can do, love that idea. Sounds awesome. Not going to do it. Anyway, you can follow me on the X Twitter at Wrestling Realist. That is at WrestlingRealist. You can catch me every Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday on the Chair Shot Radio Network every Monday, talking nerdy stuff here with Dave, Tunney, Ray, sometimes DP, sometimes DJ. You never know who's going to show up. Greg DeMarco will never show up, but, you know, other than that. Tuesdays, I'm talking hockey or music with David Ungar because I'm either doing Hockey Talk or Musical Chairs. Most of the time, you just hear me bitch about the St. Louis Blues these days because, goddamn, that team sucks. It's so annoying. And on Wednesdays, when Greg and I feel like it, you will get another edition of the Greg DeMarco Show where we talk some wrestling. Good times there. Congratulations in all seriousness, Dave and the Attitude of Aggression peeps for episode 300. When is episode 300 officially going to hit?
We don't know yet.
We don't know?
We're working on it.
We don't know yet. If you would have listened to me when I was talking earlier, that's fine.
But I know, but I don't care about you. So here's the honest question though. And this is the real thing. Is it a scheduling thing or is it like, cause we like, Dave, I got to tell you, I'm so impressed with the math you do on Bandwagon Nerds. Like you and Tony both, like, you know, exactly when we hit our 1 year anniversary, our 6 year anniversary, which by the way, I do love the new music.
Oh, Tony,
did you hear the new music?
Did you hear
the new music?
No.
Just tomorrow. Even if you, I don't really listen back to the podcast anymore. Like, at least not the way I used to. Take 5 minutes tomorrow morning, Tony, and just listen to the music Dave chose.
Is that how long the intro is?
No.
You should cut that down.
No, it's just, it's like, it is still too long, but.
That's how long I usually give her.
Whoa, snap. Of all the music you picked, Dave, for our show, I think this particular choice is the most on brand and appropriate for this show.
Definitely.
Without a doubt.
Dave's made all the music, not picked.
Well, then this music that you made is the most on brand for this show.
I agree.
You know what? You deserve it.
Thank you.
Now, on that note, that's going to do it for this week's edition of Bandwagon Nerds. Now get yourself out of the basement, get some sun, and it is Veterans Day. So go out and thank a veteran. Thank someone who made our country a safer place for you to live in. This has been Bandwagon Nerds here on the Chair Shot Radio Network, part of the chairshot.com.
I'm the Great Bambino.
Oh. Who's that?
What?
I had no idea who they were talking about.
What did he say? What, were you born in a barn, man?
Yeah, what planet are you from?
But there was no way I could let them know.
You never heard of the Salt in a Swat? The Titan of Terror.
The Colossus of Clout?
The Colossus of Clout.
The King of Crash, man.
So? I lied.
Oh, yeah, the Great Bambino. Of course. I thought you said the Great Bambi.
That wimpy deer?
Yeah, I guess. Sorry.
Yeah, you keep telling me that. Who is she? What? What? The Sultan of Swat.
The King of Crash.
The Colossus of Clout.
The Colossus of Clout.
Babe Ruth!
The Great Bambino! Oh my God, you mean that's the same guy?
In the eighth inning, leading by three, as Boone hits it to deep left. That might send the Yankees to the World Series. Boone, a hero in game seven.
Breaking news coming in from Bet365, where every nail-biting overtime win, breakaway, pick six, three-point shot, underdog win, buzzer beater, shootout, walk-off, and absolutely every play in between is amazing. From football to basketball and hockey to baseball, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio.